Well, hello and welcome to this EMJ podcast, where we will be discussing future outcomes for the treatment of systemic JIA, systemic juvenile idiopathic arthritis, with reference to the Great Ormond Street Hospital experience. My name is Sue Saville, an independent medical communications specialist, here to facilitate this promotional podcast, which has been organised and funded by Sobi UK and Ireland for healthcare professionals practising in rheumatology based in Great Britain, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland only. This podcast will contain promotional content for Kineret, Anna Kinra. So this invitation is intended for the recipient only. Please do not share the podcast. Kineret, Anna Kinra, has prescribing information and adverse event reporting information, which can be found at the bottom of the landing page where you found this podcast. The licensed indication for Kineret, Anna Kinra, is as follows. It's indicated in adults, adolescents, children and infants aged 8 months and older with a body weight of 10 kilograms or above for the treatment of Still's disease, including systemic juvenile idiopathic arthritis, SJIA, and adult onset Still's disease, AOSD, with active systemic features of moderate to high disease activity, or in patients with continued disease activity after treatment with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs known as NSAIDs or glucocorticoids. Kineret can be given as monotherapy or in combination with other anti-inflammatory drugs and disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs known as DMARDs. So, for our discussions, I'm very pleased to be joined by Dr. Charlene Foley, who's a paediatric rheumatology consultant at the Evelina Children's Hospital in London and research fellow at Great Ormond Street Hospital in London. Dr. Foley was awarded a PhD for her work with children with Down syndrome in the Down syndrome associated arthritis study. And during this work, she reported on the clinical phenotype, genetic, immune, and histopathological features of the inflammatory arthritis that affects children with Down syndrome. So, Dr. Charlene Foley, welcome to you.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here and looking forward to our chat.
So, to start with, Dr. Foley, or Charlene, if I may, as we get going, would you please outline then what autoinflammatory disease actually is? How does it present?
Well, so autoinflammatory disease briefly can be thought of as an unexplained automatic inflammation with or without a trigger. And in terms of what we're going to talk about today, systemic JIA is in fact classed as a complex but non-monogenic autoinflammatory disease.
Thank you. That's helpful to clarify that. And as someone working with children and young adults, as you do, what are the clinical manifestations of SJIA and what are the criteria needed then to make a diagnosis of that?
Yeah, so systemic JIA is a complex systemic inflammatory disorder, and it's driven by both the innate and the adaptive immune system. It's no longer really termed a diagnosis of exclusion, but does have a broad differential diagnosis. So things like malignancy, infection, other autoinflammatory conditions, and autoimmunity, and therefore does require a detailed history examination and multidisciplinary team workup to ensure exclusion of the other possible diagnoses. So historically, it was known as Still's disease in recognition of its early description by George Frederick Still in 1897, and it's classified alongside other forms of juvenile idiopathic arthritis, or JIA, using the International League of Associations for Rheumatology criteria. These ILARD classification criteria, as they're known, define systemic JIA based on the presence of arthritis and a documented fever of at least 2 weeks duration, of which at least 3 days should be quotidian. Plus one of the following, so a typical salmon pink evanescent rash, generalised lymphadenopathy, hepatomegaly, splenomegaly or serositis. However, interestingly, arthritis, although it's in the name, is not always a presenting feature of systemic JIA, leading some to suggest we return to the nomenclature Still's disease. And in fact, this would realign with the adult form of the disease, adult onset Still's disease, which differs only by age at first presentation, and therefore could potentially reduce the risk of misdiagnosis of patients who first present with systemic features of the disease in the absence of arthritis.
And I understand that an uncommon but potentially life-threatening complication of SJIA is macrophage activation syndrome, or MAS. Can you explain what that is and what can be done to treat children with this massive inflammatory response?
Yeah, so as you say, macrophage activation syndrome is a severe, potentially fatal complication of rheumatic diseases, and it's caused by excessive activation of macrophages and T cells. So these activated immune cells produce large amounts of pro-inflammatory cytokines and creating the so-called cytokine storm. Clinically in laboratory, features of MAS include a persistent non-remitting fever, hyperferritinemia, pancytopenia, fibrinolytic coagulopathy, and liver dysfunction. A precipitous fall in ESR is another characteristic feature which probably reflects the degree of hyperfibrinogenemia secondary to fibrogen consumption and liver dysfunction. Histopathologically, we see a characteristic hemophagocytic activity in the bone marrow and other tissues, but this has a low sensitivity. And in fact, the main reason for doing a bone marrow in the context of macrophage activation syndrome is to exclude malignancy rather than necessarily see hemophagocytosis. Although reported to occur with a number of rheumatic conditions, macrophage activation syndrome, or MAS, is most commonly associated with systemic JAA, followed by systemic lupus erythematosus and Kawasaki disease. Historically, it's been reported that about 10% of children with systemic JAA will develop MAS. However, it's more recently suggested that many more patients with systemic JAA, so about 30 to 40%, have subclinical features of MAS. Comparable to this, a recent retrospective review of patients with systemic JAA at Great Ormond Street Hospital found that 30% of the cohort developed MAS at some stage over their disease course. And this really serves to highlight the need for ever-vigilant awareness of the risk of MAS in systemic JAA. So with that in mind, an easy aid memoir that I use myself and when I'm teaching others is to consider MAS in the context of the three Fs. So that's fever, ferritin, and falling counts. So fever, this is persistent and unremitting, and this helps us differentiate from the quotidian fever observed in active systemic JAA. With regards to the ferritin, we see hyperferritinemia, and this appears to parallel the degree of macrophage activation. And then falling counts, so we observe pancytopenia, with thrombocytopenia usually being an early finding. The cytopenias are caused by increased cell destruction by the phagocytosis and consumption at inflammatory sites rather than inadequate cell production. Therefore, early recognition and aggressive treatment should really be the cornerstone of management of MAS in order to switch off this evolving cytokine storm and subsequent cascade of the clinical signs and symptoms that we see.
So overall, then, what causes MAS? Can certain medicines trigger it?
So, as I've mentioned, the vast majority of patients have an active rheumatic disease, so systemic JAA, lupus, Kawasaki disease, prior to developing MAS. However, it can occur in patients that have seemingly well-controlled systemic inflammation. A triggering event such as an infection or even modification in their drug therapy has been identified in about half of MAS episodes. One interesting hypothesis is relating to the balance of IL-18 and IL-6. So if this ratio rises, so we have a rise in IL-18 to IL-6, it might be that this could tip a patient into hyperinflammation or MAS. And this actually might explain anecdotally the reports of MAS triggered by IL-6 blockade. Infection triggers can also cause MAS. These can be viral, bacterial, fungal, or parasitic. However, viral illnesses, particularly EBV and other members of the herpes family, appear to be the most commonly reported triggers.
So what treatment options do you consider for patients with systemic JIA?
So like the majority of our rheumatological conditions, steroids really are first line in the treatment of systemic JIA to switch off the inflammation. As per the NHS commissioning guidelines, it's then recommended that methotrexate would be used as first-line disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drug, or DMARD, followed by addition of a biologic such as IL-1 or IL-6 blockade. However, we know with methotrexate that the response rate is not as high as for other forms of JIA, and there is simply no evidence that it is efficacious for the systemic features that we see in systemic JIA. In fact, a placebo-controlled trial performed in patients with systemic JAA found no significant difference in ACR response rate, systemic feature score, ESR or CRP with the use of methotrexate compared with placebo. Therefore, a new suggested treatment pathway for systemic JAA would be use of anakinra in combination with steroids from the outset, so once diagnosis of systemic JAA is made. Then, as per normal clinical practice, at 3-month review, if there is ongoing disease, you could consider switching to toxilizumab. Then again, at 3-month review, if there is ongoing disease, if this is predominantly arthritis, you could consider adding methotrexate or switch to an anti-TNF. And you may consider addition of canakinumab or referral for hematopoietic stem cell transplant if there are ongoing uncontrolled systemic features. In terms of use of anakinra, we usually start subcut daily injections at a dose of 2 milligrams per kilogram per day, but we can work up, depending on response, to 8 milligrams per kilogram per day. Supporting indicators for more aggressive treatment for systemic JAA or risk factors for developing systemic JAA-associated interstitial lung disease would be children that present with systemic JAA at a young age, so onset before 2 years, those that present with predominantly systemic features or episodes of recurrent MAS, or when we look at the cytokine panels, those that have raised IL-18 and interferon gamma. In terms of systemic JAA-associated interstitial lung disease, the prevalence has been reported to be about 6 to 8%, with a high mortality rate of 37 to 68%. And it's characterized by the presence of chronic, life-threatening pulmonary pathology, including pulmonary hypertension, interstitial lung disease, pulmonary alveolar proteinosis, and/or endogenous lipoid pneumonia. Therefore, it's important to think about this diagnosis in children that have uncontrolled systemic JAA. Successful trials of both IL-1 and IL-6 blockade leading to their regulatory approval for treatment of systemic JAA have undoubtedly transformed clinical outcomes by ameliorating systemic inflammation, preventing destructive arthritis, and reducing glucocorticoid toxicity. Significant therapeutic efficacy and safety of toxilizumab, which is an anti-IL-6 receptor antibody, anakinra, which we know is IL-1 receptor antagonist, and canakinumab, anti-IL-1 beta antibody, are clearly demonstrated and have also led to new insights into disease pathogenesis driven by IL-1 and IL-6 in systemic JAA. So interplay between these two, IL-1 and IL-6, in the pathogenesis of systemic JAA is yet to be clarified, and hopefully mechanistic studies may help to identify predictors of response to either IL-1 or IL-6 inhibition, allowing in the future a more personalised medicine approach.
So in your experience then with the medicine Kineret, how does its mode of action as an interleukin-1 receptor antagonist work? Can you also provide a summary of the safety profile?
Yeah, so in systemic JAA, unchecked early autoinflammation is driven by, as I've said previously, increased innate immune activation, including dysregulation of IL-1, which is important when we're thinking about anakinra, and IL-6, which may lead to a state of chronic T lymphocyte activation with an unfavorable balance of T effector and regulatory cells that then drive chronic arthritis over time. Therefore, early use of anakinra or Kineret as an IL-1 receptor antagonist makes sense and could abrogate the development of a population of these arthritis-causing T cells to avert chronic systemic inflammation and arthritis. Our observation, actually, on a retrospective review of the patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital with a diagnosis of systemic JAA, showed higher clinically inactive disease at 1 year in those receiving biologic DMARD, so most commonly anakinra or toxilizumab, within 3 months of systemic JAA diagnosis. And this could be compatible with a therapeutic window of opportunity hypothesis. Liberal use of biologic DMARDs over the disease course in this cohort at Great Ormond Street, 84% in fact required treatment with a biologic, mainly anakinra or toxilizumab at last review, may also explain the overall low degree of chronic arthritis that was observed at last review in this Great Ormond Street cohort. So only 5% developed chronic arthritis. What our observations and the evidence base do strongly suggest is that it does seem logical to use proven, effective and well-tolerated treatments for systemic JAA. So, for example, anakinra sooner rather than later, and particularly early in the disease course when systemic features dominate the clinical picture. Since 84% in our cohort ultimately required this, in Great Ormond Street, current NHS pathways in England that mandate failing one synthetic DMARD for 3 months in the case of systemic JAA or two synthetic DMARDs in the case of adult onset Still's disease are increasingly outdated and really not supported by clinical trial data, resulting in significant delay in achieving clinically inactive disease. This approach, ironically, is likely to be even more expensive for society when the full economic costs of failing to control a severe systemic inflammatory condition over several months are considered. The safety profile of Kineret is well established from more than 20 years of use since its first approval in 2001. In clinical studies, the most common adverse event associated with Kineret is injection site reaction, which are most reported as mild to moderate. Injection site reactions typically appear within 2 weeks of starting treatment, but can disappear within 4 to 6 weeks. Other common adverse events with Kineret include headache, neutropenia, thrombocytopenia, infections, and increased serum levels of cholesterol.
And you mentioned there biologics. What about the earlier use of biologics? How successful have those been?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we did a retrospective review of patients with systemic JAA at Great Ormond Street Hospital, collecting data from patients that were attending over a 16-year period. And we found that outcomes at 1 year were more favourable in those receiving early biologic treatment. So by that, we mean within 3 months of diagnosis compared to those who did not. Clinically inactive disease was achieved in 90% of those receiving biologics early versus 53%. So that was significant, respectively, despite those receiving early biologic treatment having more severe systemic disease. This favourable therapeutic signal was not apparent at last review, however, possibly because most patients, as I've previously said, that's 84%, had received biologic DMARDs by this stage.
So Dr. Charlene Foley, working at Great Ormond Street Hospital as you do, a world-class leading paediatric hospital, what would you say is the future for treating SJIA?
So in line with the 2021 ACR guideline for treatment of systemic JAA and the soon-to-be-published European guidance, and based on the growing evidence base, the future appears to favour use of biologic medications such as anakinra upfront at the time of diagnosis of systemic JAA, bypassing the need to fail one synthetic DMARD such as methotrexate, as per the current NHS commissioning guideline. Also, based on our experience at Great Ormond Street and the mounting evidence base, early use of biologic DMARDs is logical and advantageous because it is highly efficacious. As per the studies I'm about to discuss, it's well tolerated and ultimately likely to be cost saving for society by achieving clinically inactive disease earlier. There is increasing evidence that the efficacy for methotrexate for the systemic features of systemic JAA is poor. We know that. Evidence for the benefit of IL-1 or IL-6 blockade in systemic JAA is mounting. For example, De Benedetti et al. Reported an 85% ACR30 response rate at week 12 with toxilizumab, compared to a 24% placebo response rate in systemic JAA. The ANA-JAS trial, a small randomized placebo-controlled trial of anakinra in patients with systemic JAA, reported 67% ACR30 response at 1 month, compared to 8% of the control group. And Terhar et al. Reported a 55% remission rate for patients with systemic JAA at 1 month treated with anakinra monotherapy without glucocorticoids, and a 76% remission rate at 1 year with 52% off treatment. Other uncontrolled studies have also demonstrated that the use of anakinra early in the disease course is associated with very good short-term outcome. There is also increasing evidence for the antileukin 1 beta antagonist canakinumab. So two phase 3 trials reported by Roberto et al. Showed ACR30 response of 84% compared to 10% placebo in patients with systemic JAA, and direct comparison of biologic DMARDs and synthetic DMARDs in patients with adult onset Still's disease showed beneficial effect of anakinra over synthetic DMARDs in the open label extension trial. Newer treatments for systemic JAA that may soon emerge include the Janice Janus kinase inhibitors or JAK inhibitors. Treatment of systemic JAA with JAK inhibitors is currently being studied in several different clinical trials and reported anecdotally by some to be efficacious and well tolerated.
Gosh, Dr. Charlene Foley, you have given us so much detail and information there. It's been absolutely fascinating hearing from you. Thank you so much for all those insights.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I've enjoyed chatting to you.
And to our audience, thank you very much for listening, taking in all that information that Dr. Charlene Foley has been giving us there. Thanks also to the EMJ, the European Medical Journal, and to Sobi for bringing us this podcast. Do tune in to emjreviews.com. There are plenty more podcasts and webinars there on a wide variety of medical matters. Well, from me, Sue Saville, thank you for listening and goodbye for now.